This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio. This is the weekend of May 15th, 2010. And a warm hello to listeners in Anchorage, Atlanta, Monterey, and Grand Rapids, as well as to everyone who's listening via podcast. Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a group that I was a co-founder of back in 1976. This is aging me as a college student with my mother, Anne Gaylor. And it went national in 1978, and we work for the separation of church and state, and our members are personally free from religion. They are atheists, agnostics, skeptics, whatever you like to call yourself. We all disbelieve in the same God. And this is a first for me and for this show. Since it began about 4 years ago, I am flying solo. Thankfully, God is not my co-pilot, but I am without co-host Dan Barker, because Dan is on a tour in California. He was speaking to a Free Thought convention last weekend. He has gone to the University of California, Irvine, sponsored by a student Free Thought Club, talking about Let's Call the Whole Thing Off, FFRF's National Day of Prayer Victory. He's been at the University of California, Santa Barbara, on to the lovely city of San Luis Obispo, at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. And this weekend, he's speaking at the Humanist Society at their 15th anniversary celebration. So Dan will be back next week, and he sends his irreverent greetings. Our guest later on today's show is very special. Patrick Elliott is a young freethinker, and he'll be joining me in the studio, where I'm here with our producer-engineer, Brian Tirani. And Patrick is FFRF's law clerk at the moment. He's a recent grad of the University of Wisconsin Law School, and he's been kindly working as a paralegal while we are fundraising to hire him to join the staff of FFRF as its junior staff attorney. And we've been very impressed with his work and commitment. And so later in the show, I'll be talking with Patrick about the legal complaints he's been handling very adeptly for the Freedom From Religion Foundation and why he shares our commitment to keep religion and government separate. And for this segment of today's show, I want to talk some more about a decision that seems to be shaking up the religious right big time, and that is the district court ruling by Judge Barbara Crabb in FFRF versus Obama, finding the National Day of Prayer unconstitutional. And thank goodness the National Day of Prayer is over for the year. Congress designates it as the first Thursday of every year, and life is starting to return to normal for us at the offices of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. But Jackie, our office manager, is still slogging through about 6,000 unanswered emails from new prospective members who've contacted us. So if you've recently asked for info or you've joined and haven't heard from us, that's why. We're really, really busy. We're catching up. We're also hearing from people who saw the full page ad in last Thursday's New York Times. That was May 6th. And from people who heard about our Let's Call the Whole Thing Off anti-National Day of Prayer rally at the state capitol in Madison, Wisconsin. And here's some coverage from the local CBS affiliate.
Government recognizing a National Day of Prayer has polarized some groups, arguing that government should not call on the public to participate in religious activities.
For some, it's concern over the separation of church and state. In downtown this afternoon, both sides spoke. News 3's Brad Champson was there for both rallies. He joins us now with more. Brad.
Well, it was the Freedom From Religion Foundation and Wisconsin Family Action holding separate rallies during the National Day of Prayer. Now, neither are government-backed events. The atmosphere was not confrontational, but the differing feelings were clear.
God bless America.
Two sides of the Capitol Square,
America was founded as a Judeo-Christian nation.
Two very different beliefs.
People were fleeing religious persecution in Europe and came here to be able to celebrate whatever religion they want.
And a government building right in the middle.
I find it very prophetic to stand on this side of the Capitol and kind of the opposition on the other side.
The National Day of Prayer has created a bit of a divide between those celebrating worship and faith.
We as Christians are praying that God will give us wisdom, and we're instructed by Scripture to pray for our leaders.
And others feeling religious influence in government is dangerous.
Many people in this country who don't believe in God at all, and it's not simply a matter of, well, if as long as it's non-denominationally religious, that pretty much covers everybody, because there are a number of us that aren't religious at all.
One group is praying for our government, while many in the other don't pray. They may not agree in their opinion of the role of religion in life, but they do appreciate each side's right to voice opinions.
Everybody should have the right to do that. I just don't think that the government should be making decrees, you know, declaring these things.
And that was a very nice gathering. I do want to make one correction. Although the prayer service was not technically sponsored by the state, it was privately held. It was the result of a government-sponsored National Day of Prayer, and that's what our complaint is. And I do want to thank FFRF staff for participating in making signs. Scott Colson read the judge's firm words. Executive Assistant Katie Daniel talked about what it's like. She's a new employee at the foundation, just graduated from college, to pick up the phone and get death threats and to be harassed and even to, as she pointed out, have someone threaten to do unspeakable things to your pet. Matt Rothschild joined us at the rally from the Progressive. Jim Coors was there. A volunteer and retired attorney, Wendy Goldberg, ended her speech by suggesting that Barbara Crabb be nominated for that position that had been unfilled at that point on the Supreme Court. Rebecca Markert, our staff attorney, spoke about the many violations she deals with over the National Day of Prayer. And I also want to thank those equally lovely people who made up the audience. My dad was there. He's a co-plaintiff in the lawsuit. He was holding a great big peace flag. Phyllis Rose is an officer, another plaintiff in the case. And I loved Carolina Johnson's sign. It said, "I love J.C., and that stands not for Jesus Christ, but for Judge Crabb. And that was pictured on the front page of the Wisconsin State Journal. And Executive Assistant Bonnie Gooch's photo with a similar sign went all over the Associated Press wire with coverage by Roan Foley, and it was fun to see that. Now, since Dan can't be here in person, I'd like to play an actually very good interview he did recently on Fox TV, on Fox and Friends, a week ago Saturday. And there are miracles. Fox let him get in a word edgewise. He was out in California already, and he got picked up in a limo by Fox and taken to a studio in Los Angeles. And Dan's brother, Daryl, has been teasing him about that tan he was sporting. There was a little Hollywood makeup for this show.
Well, for 58 years, on the first Thursday of every May, millions of Americans observe the National Day of Prayer. But Thursday may have been the last time. Barring an overturn by the federal courts, the National Day of Prayer has been ruled unconstitutional. That's thanks in part to our next guest, Dan Barker. He's the co-president of the For Religion Foundation and author of Godless. He joins us this morning. Good morning to you, Dan. Thanks for being here.
Good morning,
since 1952, the National Day of Prayer has been going on. No objections. Why do you have a problem on this day when people are called upon to pray? No one is forced to do anything.
Since 1952, when Billy Graham and Evangelical Right forced Congress to direct the president to direct our nation to pray, there have been many objections by atheists, by agnostics, by Jews, by outsiders, by non-evangelical Christians. It has been a very divisive and confrontational day. And what it does is it makes millions of good Americans who don't pray, who don't believe in prayer, or who don't believe in the evangelical version of prayer, feel like political outsiders. The judge in her decision wrote a very careful opinion about the law, Supreme Court precedent, and good history, pointing out that our founders did not even pray in the Constitutional Convention. And when Franklin brought up the issue, Future Justice Jay said, "We can't do it. We don't all agree on this matter. It makes some people feel like insiders and outsiders." And her decision, if you'll read it, is a wonderful testament to American freedom, that the government cannot take sides on religious issues.
Okay, I guess the difficulty I'm having is at times like this, with a bombing attempt in Times Square, with an oil spill down in the Gulf, killing wildlife, the livelihood of fishermen down there. We've got situations going all around this country, flooding down in Tennessee, killing 30 people. Why would you want to object to a day in which some people find some spirituality, they find some answers, and find some reason to think that things are going to be okay? It doesn't force you or any other atheist to do anything.
And those people can't pray unless the government holds their hand. Those people are not free to pray unless the president gets up and proclaims a day of prayer. This is a country of freedom. The country, as a secular nation, we have a godless constitution that protects the freedom of those evangelical Christians and other believers to pray as much as they want. The judge's decision was not against their freedoms to pray or go to church or worship or stand on their head and pray to Mother Goose if they want. The decision was against our secular government orchestrating a private religious ritual. She said that is what crosses the line.
Of course, this is also, as you know, a Judeo-Christian country, our roots. And the Constitution has passages such as, we are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. My question to you, sir, is what's next? Obviously, Christmas has its roots in Christianity. Is that something that the government should no longer recognize as well?
You made a mistake. The Constitution does not talk about the Creator. The Constitution, you were quoting the Declaration of Independence, which does not govern our country.
The Declaration of Independence. So my question is, when you talk about things like Christmas, is that something you'd like to eliminate as well, as far as the government recognizing it?
The Justice talked about Christmas and Thanksgiving as having partial religious roots, but that Christmas and Thanksgiving have such a secular purpose that all of us can celebrate. In fact, Christians stole Christmas from the pagans. That was a natural holiday all along. But that this particular day of prayer goes too far. It crosses the line. There's nothing secular about a day of prayer. It excludes all of us. Christians are free to pray if they wish. We are not a Judeo-Christian country. We never were. Our Constitution is godless. In fact, our founders wrote a treaty with Tripoli declaring very clearly that the United States government is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion. But we are a nation of diversity, not Christianity.
Dan, I'm no constitutional lawyer, but you are objecting on the Establishment Clause, which thereby reads, in this case, there is no establishment of religion on behalf of the government, correct?
Actually, there is an establishment of religion. When the government promotes religion, read the First Amendment. It says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And the courts consistently upheld that the government must back off and be neutral. It is these evangelicals who are confusing neutrality with hostility. They think if the government is not blowing their trumpet, somehow that's offending their freedom to believe. We have a separation of church and state in this country which protects all of us. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful for Christians, Jews, Muslims, atheists, Hindus, whatever. This is a secular democratic republic, not a theocracy.
All right, Dan Barker, co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We appreciate you coming on.
You can
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can catch all that if you want to see it in person. I mean, at our website, go to the news link and look for FFRF in the news. Or videos. Now, I don't want to torture listeners, but here's Bill O'Reilly on the National Day of Prayer. He had Sarah Palin on as a guest on his May 6th show, and the religious disinformation sure piled up fast.
Walk into the Supreme Court chamber, and you'll see the Ten Commandments. And you know, so we know that you're absolutely correct. The Founding Fathers did base not only the Declaration of Independence, but the constitutional protections on what they thought was right and wrong. And what they thought was right and wrong came from the Ten Commandments, which is Judeo-Christian philosophy. That is beyond a reasonable doubt.
that ain't the Ten Commandments at the Supreme Court. They're blank tablets. There's a number of lawgivers, both mythical and literal, depicted on various bas-relief statuary there. It would be like saying the laws of our country are based on Confucius, because he's depicted at the Supreme Court as well. And regular listeners to Free Thought Radio know there's no reference to the Ten Commandments in our Constitution. Our founders adopted the Ten Amendments, known as the Bill of Rights, not the Ten Commandments. And now here's Dumb and Dumber.
I think we should just kind of keep this clean, keep it simple, go back to what our founders and our founding documents meant. They're quite clear that we would create law based on the God of the Bible and the Ten Commandments. It's pretty simple.
You know, what do you say to the people in Chinatown, in San Francisco, and here in New York and other big cities, the Asian Americans who come from a different religious culture? Do they not participate in the Judeo-Christian tradition? I mean, they don't believe it. They believe something else.
We get to say to them, yay, welcome to America, where we are tolerant and you have a freedom to express whatever faith. You can participate peacefully in whatever religion that you choose. That's what America is all about. And we would ask, though, that there be respect by our courts. Look at Judge Crabb in this ridiculous ruling that, or her opinion that's come down saying that National Day of Prayer is unconstitutional. We would ask that there would be respect for what the Judeo-Christian beliefs are, too.
So that is inalienable, not unalienable, Sarah Palin. And of course, she makes the same mistake of conflating the Declaration of Independence with the Constitution, but the Declaration of Independence isn't Judeo-Christian either. Now, here's this inexplicable comment she makes about Judge Barbara Crabb.
What drives a Judge Crabb to say, hey, this should be illegal? What do you think drives that?
You know, you wonder what in hell scares people about talking about America's foundation of faith. And you wonder why in the world would she rule as she's ruled? And I guess she'll further explain herself.
Well, she wouldn't wonder if she had read Judge Crabb's 66-page ruling. Judge Crabb isn't going to be making another statement. It's all in this very eloquent ruling in which she points out that the government cannot take sides on religion, and that people can proclaim their own days of prayer, the government can't. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, flying solo without Dan Barker today. He's on the road. Free Thought Radio will be right back to mark the life of Lena Horne.
Hi, this is Dan Garrix from Flint, Michigan, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. Dan Barker, my co-host, is on the road. You may know that Lena Horne died this week at age 92. So there is a form of immortality. I want to play her version of Yip Harburg's Ain't It the Truth, taking many gentle digs at religion and religious ideas. Yip Harburg was the atheist who wrote Somewhere Over the Rainbow. This was the song Too Irreverent to Make It into the Cut of Cabin in the Sky. Lena Horne fortunately recorded it for another musical.
Life is short, short, brother. Ain't it the truth? And there is no other. Ain't it the truth? You got to rock that rainbow while you still got your youth. Ain't it the solid truth? Was a guy named Adam. Ain't it the truth? Said, nah, look here, madam. Ain't it the truth? You got to bite that apple while you still got your tooth. Ain't it the mellow truth? Lord gave us wine and gin to drown our troubles in. What's all this talk of sin? Rise and shine and fall in line. Get that new religion. Ain't it the truth? For you is dead pigeon. Ain't it the truth? 'Cause when you laid horizontal in that telephone booth, there'll be no breathing spell. It's only natural. Ain't it the gossip pill? Shaw, Shaw, brother, ain't it the truth? And there is no other, ain't it the truth? So if you don't love living, then you're slightly uncouth. Ain't it the dignified truth? Said that gal to Barry, ain't it the truth? Love is cash and carry, ain't it the truth? You got to shake it down or mix it up with vermouth. Ooh, ain't it the visible, visible truth?
Lena Horne singing Ain't It the Truth, clever words by Yip Harburg. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, you're listening to Free Thought Radio, and I'll be right back after this break to talk with Patrick Elliott about recent legal complaints filed by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Hi, this is David Hall from Kensington, Maryland, which is just outside Washington, D.C., and I'm listening to Free Thought Radio. Thank you, Judge Crabb.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. I'm flying solo today, but glad to have someone join me in the studio for a change. And our guest today is Patrick Elliott, who is FFRF's newest employee. He is a new grad from the University of Wisconsin-Madison Law School and is joining the staff as our junior staff attorney soon. He's been working as a paralegal. Welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Patrick, you have come a long way because what is your background?
Well, I'm from West St. Paul originally and grew up Catholic. So I was Catholic for 21 years and was baptized and did First Communion, Reconciliation, Confirmation, and I've kind of made the full switch because I'm an atheist now at this point.
You're an atheist now? You weren't an altar boy.
No, I was not.
Well, that's probably lucky. And what opened your eyes there?
Well, actually, I also attended the University of Wisconsin here, and one of the courses that they offer is on early Christian literature. So we learned more about the history of the Gospels, and that kind of opened my eyes to a lot of different things that I had no idea about before. When I was a practicing Catholic, I didn't really know much about the history of the Bible, especially the New Testament. So one of the textbooks I think we had for that class was a book by Bart Ehrman, who has done a lot of writings on the New Testament. That kind of opened my eyes and got me thinking. And it wasn't a quick transition, but it took some time to kind of think about these things.
Now, in the old days, the Catholic Church kind of discouraged reading the Bible. Were you reading the Bible as a Catholic? Were you encouraged, or was it sort of?
I don't think it was necessarily discouraged, but it. I had also gone to religious education classes growing up. So we had snippets here and there, but it wasn't encouraged to read the Bible per se. I started reading the Bible on my own and with Bible study groups in college. And that's when I started to learn. That's when I started to learn more. And that's what interests me in even taking a class just about, Christian literature in the first place.
So like most unbelievers, you probably came to this by yourself. Right?
I didn't follow, any particular path. That's right. I was kind of doing it on my own exploration.
Thought it out for yourself.
Yes.
And then what was your major here at the University of Wisconsin?
Oh, well, for undergrad, I was legal studies and political science.
You always wanted to be an attorney, probably.
No, not really, no? Actually. I actually kind of has a hobby. I like kind of marine animals and stuff. I have an aquarium and I even used to work at an aquarium back in Minnesota when I was there. The Mall of America has a big aquarium there. So actually, when I started school, I thought that's probably I'd be biology, zoology, something like that. And kind of through college, started taking legal studies courses and got a lot more interested in the law, even taking First Amendment course here at the University of Wisconsin. And that kind of opened up a new area for me that I thought was very interesting.
Well, it is interesting, but marine life's interesting too. Now, how long did you work at Mall of America?
Yeah. Well, I started when I was pretty young. I think I was their youngest employee there. I was probably 17 or something and worked there off and on for maybe like 4 years. It's a very interesting place to work. I liked it a lot, and kind of for being very shy, I think it helped me talk to people, because that was part of my job, was to kind of teach people about, you know, the different animals and things at the aquarium there. And
it, were you having to clean it too?
That wasn't part of my duties. No,
that would be a lot.
Yeah.
Well, you're cleaning up after the First Amendment now. So then what you went to, when did you graduate again? You went to the law school here at the UW?
Yeah, I graduated 2009 from University of Wisconsin Law School, and I'm happy to have started at FFRF in just February of this year. I've kind of been trying to help out where I can with Rebecca. I know she's got a lot of, she's our staff attorney. She has a lot of complaints that we get every week.
Yes, we're averaging about 50 formal complaints where people are filling out the state church, what is it? It's an online questionnaire. But we also get the phone calls and letters, and so it's a lot to deal with. Yeah, and so you've just been part-time, but we're looking forward to you going full-time in July.
Yeah, that should be great.
And when you were at the law school, did you study constitutional law? Was there any emphasis on separation of church and state?
Well, I know currently, I actually didn't take this class. They do have a religion and a law class taught by a professor here, which for some reason I wasn't able to take. They also have First Amendment class. Unfortunately, they don't focus enough on, or much at all on, the religion clauses. Mm-hmm. So it was primarily free speech issues, which do tie into a lot of what we do, mm-hmm. Especially relating to schools and whatnot, because a lot of religious groups also have the ability that they have to be provided space too. Schools can't discriminate against religious groups in certain circumstances. So it's helpful in that context. But formally, I didn't have a lot of training in law school on it. I've kind of took an interest on my own prior to working at FFRF, and since that time, have read a lot of cases and done a lot of reading about the First Amendment and various law review articles.
I guess call it a de-baptism by fire is what yeah. You've had, throwing you right into these cases. And then I think the most, one of the most interesting cases is one that where someone had emailed a complaint saying that there seemed to be a high school group meeting in a church, and this was in Janesville, Wisconsin, and it looked like it was a minor complaint that, well, you tell us what happened when you researched it.
Yeah, I mean, we had the contact from someone in Janesville, Wisconsin, and in looking into the school and on their school website, I noticed that they have a major part of their programming is 12-step programming for, this is a substance abuse, I guess, alternative charter school. So it is a public school. It's run by the school district of Janesville, and they were requiring or promoting 12-step programming for all their students. Well, one of the issues with that, and we've gotten, I don't even know, even this month, maybe 3 or 4 new complaints about Alcoholics Anonymous is, and other 12-step programming, is that people have objected to that, in that there's a lot of religious components in terms of the 12 steps themselves. I believe 6 or 7 refer to God or a higher power. The courts that have analyzed, for First Amendment analysis, the courts that have analyzed 12-step programming like Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous have found them to be religious programming. So if you're on probation or in prison, they cannot coerce you into attending these programs or have any penalty for not attending.
In many district level appeal areas,
yeah,
like
in
Wisconsin.
The Seventh Circuit has a case. There's cases in the Ninth Circuit. All the cases that I have seen have said this is a religious program and you can't require people in probation or community supervision or in prison to go to any of these programs.
Much less than require a public school student.
Yes.
Who's truly a captive audience.
Yes.
To go into it. So, let's get a picture of what is going on in these schools. When the kids go to this school, it's a church, first of all.
They're in, I think it's St. John Lutheran Church in Janesville, Wisconsin. It's in a building connected to the chapel, I guess is the right word. I know that another organization, Americans United, had written to the school district this fall about it, and the school district sent a letter from their attorney saying, this is what the church looks like. This is not a problem. We have since learned that some of that letter isn't necessarily accurate with the layout of the church. There is a big cross, and even in the entrance to the school, there's a cross on the side there.
So kids can't escape the Christian component of this building.
Yeah, yes. I mean, the main issues with this school then are, one, its physical location being in that church building. We would hope, especially in Janesville, that there are other locations that they could choose to use the school. And secondly, the 12-step programming is problematic in terms of what it entails. And that has been, I know that a lot of people that have contacted me have said they usually say the Lord's Prayer at meetings. They focus heavily on that higher power talk. They say usually serenity prayer. So it is a religious experience, and that's how the courts have looked at it. So obviously we don't think a public school using state funds would be able to, under the Establishment Clause and under Wisconsin law, to require students to go to those meetings.
And so when you wrote a very good letter, a strongly worded letter, but what happened?
Well, unfortunately, the Janesville Gazette is the local paper, and they interviewed some of the school officials, and the school officials also came up with a statement. Instead of admitting kind of what had been going on and saying this is how we're going to correct these issues, or this is how we view this issue, they kind of denied that 12-step programming was a component of their teaching. There's actually quite a few contradictory statements that officials from the district had made about that. We even have other statements, recorded statements and via email that do show that it was a required or promoted component of their programming.
So they're denying and they're stonewalling.
So we received, I think, last week or the week before, a letter from their attorneys saying that the documents weren't accurate, that their sobriety contract that they made students sign, their student handbook, all of the promotional materials about the school, that all those materials weren't accurate, and that in practice, students weren't required to go to AA. But again, we have other documents that weren't mentioned in our initial letter because we didn't have them at the time that back up our original belief that it was a required part of the programming.
So it's kind of shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, I think for parents in the school district or people anywhere, they want to know what's going on in their schools. They deserve the right to know what has been going on and how the school will address those issues instead of just denying everything and claiming that the papers were wrong instead of the programming was wrong.
So we are pursuing this vigorously. And also there's another charter school in the Waukesha area that is doing the same thing, and who knows what else is going on. So, and you receive many school complaints in general, and we make them a priority. So I'm Annie Laura Gaylor talking with Patrick Elliott, who is a new staff attorney at the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And we are going to be right back to talk more about what Patrick has been doing to keep state and church separate. A Heal Me crusade with a mayor and the governor of Florida promoting it for the National Day of Prayer, prayer breakfasts, and other school complaints. And we'll be right back.
I'm Michael Newdow, and this is Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. My co-host Dan Barker is on the road and will be back next week. In the studio with me today is Patrick Elliott, FFRF, a new staff attorney, going full-time this summer. And he's been working with Rebecca Markert, our lead counsel, on many, many state church violations, and we've been talking about public school violations. But before we go back to some of the violations you've been working on, Patrick, why don't you tell us what it's like working at FFRF from your perspective?
Oh, sure. Well, it's a different than other jobs, I guess, I've had, especially given my prior aquarium job. But it's kind of funny because where I typically work is right next to Dan Barker's office. So I get a chance to kind of hear him take phone calls sometimes and whatnot. And one of the interesting things, I think, how does he usually introduce himself on the show? He says he's
friendly neighborhood atheist.
And that's very true, because if somebody calls, sometimes people will call wanting to ask Dan questions about various issues, and before they can even get into their questions, he's usually asking them questions, trying to figure out, you know, who this person is, what they're interested in. And I just thought that's kind of an interesting thing, that Dan seems really concerned about the people that are just trying to get information out of him. He's very friendly and, willing to talk to people. And just the office in general, I would say it's a very good atmosphere and welcoming atmosphere.
Well, you're one of the tea drinkers.
Yeah.
We have a lot of tea drinking, not tea parties, around the office. And yeah, we think it's a fun place to work.
Yeah. I'd say the only different, I just noticed this maybe last week. The only funny thing I guess I would say about working there is, unlike for most people, the office they work in, if you sneeze, somebody says, God bless you, right away. But if I sneeze or I hear Dan or somebody else, it's pretty silent, or we'll say salute or something.
Well, if I hear, I say Gesundheit, good health in German.
Yes.
So then there was speaking of the National Day of Prayer, which was the topic of earlier part of the show, you were working with Rebecca on a lot of specific complaints, and Rebecca sent out a letter of complaint to Governor Charlie Crist of Florida, because he taped a video welcome to use at a National Day Prayer rally. Mm-hmm. Now tell us, this was a different kind of prayer rally.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I wouldn't even call it a prayer rally. What we found out was that there's this event called the Heal Me Crusade, which is in Plant City, Florida. Which is why the governor, Crist of Florida, was kind of promoting and talking highly of this event. But when we started looking into what was going on there, it does coincide with the National Day of Prayer. I think it's actually a 3-day event, but it's like a faith healing, kind of conference, where there's videos of this if you want to see. I think if you Google Heal Me Crusade, you can probably find the website, and they have videos on there, including they have one video of the mayor of Plant City, Florida, promoting and giving a proclamation at the beginning of this Heal Me Crusade, as well as they have the video of the governor, Crist of Florida, on there. But the more shocking part is what goes on. They do like faith healing during the middle of their event. They had one woman say, quote, like she's like coughing up her cancer, like somebody's healing her, coughing up her cancer. They have people stand up out of wheelchairs. They have a very elderly woman. They claim that they turned off her oxygen and she was still breathing. So, I mean, it's not just a prayer event. This is a lot more severe, because people's health is involved, and that it could really impact people's lives. So I think that's why I think from the legal standpoint, we're not necessarily against people having these beliefs, but when the mayor of a city and the governor of a state are promoting this, I think it's very concerning.
Well, it is, and he has a fairly liberal reputation that he doesn't use a lot of religion in his own political life, and yet here he is recording a welcoming statement for a faith healing event, a Christian, openly Christian, fundamentalist Christian event. And probably he felt pressure that he had to do something, but I think this really crosses the line, because children's lives could be at risk, or the lives of people who have cancer, whatever. This is just ignorant. So you wrote very kindly. I asked you, could you write some? They had sponsors.
I don't know how involved the corporate side is. They're on the website for the event. They have a thank you page for their sponsors, and a few of the sponsors that are listed are UPS. I think they have several hotels listed, like the Marriott, La Quinta, and I'm forgetting the fourth one. But they have they have their trademark logos all over the website, saying that they're sponsors of this event. So we did write letting the attorneys know for these different hotels and for UPS, saying this is how your trademark is being used. As of today, the last I checked, they were still on the website, even though we notified them last week.
And I thought UPS was going to sort of made them say that it was just the local UPS.
I think what actually happened is that there must be some local branches of all of these organizations. However, they're using the corporate logo of a national and international organizations. which they clearly have the right control over their trademarks. So
that part is not the state church, but it's more like a consumer complaint that why are they promoting ignorance and dangerous practices? And they have a Matthew quote, you know, the lame shall walk, the blind shall see. They have Bible verses at their website. And it's unabashedly fundamentalist Christian. And they have customers who are Jewish, non-religious, you know, who don't believe in faith healing. You know, what's going on here? So that was good that you got the word out at least. And people can go to our website and look up the news releases and action alerts if you want to get involved in this too. And then briefly, we're almost out of time, but you wrote, I think, the mayor's prayer breakfast person in Santa Clarita, California, too, last week.
Yeah, well, we've done, as with all the National Day of Prayer events, we've written letters. I mean, you wrote a letter to, I don't know, 1,000 mayors or something like that. But we get individual complaints from people in their community letting us know about prayer breakfasts and things that are going on. And the legal problem for those ones is that it's an official... official sponsorship by the mayor in that capacity. The mayor could certainly attend on their own and not be listed as mayor. But the one I think you mentioned is this Santa Clarita, California one, that somebody in that community notified us, and we wrote to the mayor. And I think the problem there, again, some of the things that were being talked about were very concerning. It was a very Christian event, and in the local paper kind of covered some of the comments by speakers at the event. And it was titled, you know, the mayor's prayer breakfast, and the mayor was one of the keynote speakers.
So, gee, only Christians welcome in that community, huh?
So, yeah, that's the problem. We would hope that the mayors and all government officials would distance themselves from these events in their official capacity. Certainly, if she has those beliefs, she could attend a prayer breakfast, but titling it the Santa Clarita Valley Mayor's Prayer Breakfast, and then her being attending and just being affiliated with some of the comments by other speakers at that event were pretty concerning, I think, for people that live in that community and that ended up contacting our organization.
Well, thank you so much, Patrick Elliott, for joining us and for your work for the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Free Thought Radio. We want to thank our producer and engineer, Brian Tranny. Our announcer is Buzz Kemper. Free Thought Radio is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. Go to ffrf.org/radio for archives. Ask for more information about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Join us, support us, ask for a sample issue of our May paper, and tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday